we turn back to Luke chapter 12 and the passage from verse 13, when someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." It's a great statement of Jesus, a warning and an affirmation of an important principle. Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Jesus' teaching is always challenging. It's always searching. And when people came to him, whoever they were, he perceived their real need. He perceived the need of their hearts. And this was a time of popularity. There were many people following him and listening to his teaching. He's dealing here with one man, but he draws from this one man's situation a wider principle. And one of the things that Jesus often was able to point out were areas of temptation or areas of sin that people may well have not been aware of. And so this passage is highlighting covetousness, the tenth commandment, "Thou shalt not covet." And I want us to think about what Jesus says here, the principle, and then the parable that he says, and then the statement that he makes at the end in verse 21. This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich towards God. So he touches on a number of things, and it's a challenging passage to us, particularly living as we do in the Western world. We live in a materialistic society, a consumer society. We have lots of things, lots of stuff that people in other parts of the world couldn't possibly have. And so the issue of covetousness is a really, very real issue for us all. It's not only an issue for those who have a lot of things or a lot of money. It's also something as a temptation to those who don't have much money, but who would like it, or don't have many things, but would like them. And it's a temptation, therefore, that comes to us all. And the first thing that Jesus does is to highlight the sin of covetousness in this man who comes to Jesus with his request. The man obviously saw Jesus as a man of authority. He taught with authority and not like the scribes, the teachers of the law. And so he comes asking Jesus to arbitrate in a dispute with his brother. "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." It seems that perhaps there were two brothers, and perhaps the older brother, who's not the one speaking to Jesus, was holding on to the whole inheritance. And the Jewish inheritance law were quite clear. If there were two sons, then one, the older brother, would have the firstborn share. He'd have a double portion, and the second son would have one portion. And it seems that this man was troubled because his brother wasn't willing to give him the share of the inheritance. He wanted his rights. That's a very modern idea, isn't it? I have my rights. And perhaps if Jesus tells my brother to do it, then the man will do it. And Jesus says, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" He says, "That's not my calling. That's not why I came into this world. I haven't come to give things to people. I've come to bring people to God." And so he won't get involved in that situation. And then he gives that warning. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And so he highlights the sin of covetousness in this sense, that he recognizes that in this man's case, he's come to that point in life where he's going to inherit. There will be a share of an estate that falls to him. And for many people, that is a time when they receive a sum of money, perhaps much greater than that which they have earned regularly. And it's a time when perhaps somebody is saying, well, you know, now when I have this inheritance, I'll be much better off. And probably this man had been planning how he was going to spend it. And he believes that once he gets his inheritance, if his brother would also only give him the inheritance, then he would be a much happier man. And Jesus recognizes that. The man is entitled to his inheritance. But the trouble is that inheritance will make him focus upon material things and upon money. And Jesus says, watch out. Be on your guard. Recognize that this is a temptation which can come to everyone. That we believe if only we had money, and the more we have the better, then we would be truly happy. Because a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. True life, life that satisfies, life that fulfills, is not found in an abundance, it could be an excess of possessions. But that's a belief this man has, and lots of people have it. That if I have lots of things and lots of money, then I will be happy. And so Jesus recognizes and highlights a temptation to covetousness. I think of all the commandments, covetousness is the one that is often sort of overlooked, perhaps because it comes at the end of the list. And we put a great deal of focus upon some of the other commandments, very rightly so. But God's command is, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. You know, we look at houses. That's a nice house. I'd like a house like that. It's our neighbor's house. And then there's that temptation to be unfaithful in marriage, coveting your neighbor's wife or their manservant or their maidservant. We probably don't have manservants and maidservants, but we have perhaps labor-saving devices, the things people have to make their life easier. And we think, that's nice. I could do one of those too. And his ox or donkey. Somebody's got a nice car. We'd like a car like that as well. You know, a neighbor draws in, they've got a brand new car, and you think, well, that looks nice. And coveting, wanting what our neighbor has, anything that belongs to your neighbor. We talk about keeping up with the Joneses, don't we, really? And that's a constant temptation. In fact, it's part of how a materialistic consumer society works. When the first credit card, I think it was the first credit card, was issued, Access, its strapline was, it takes the waiting out of wanting. You don't have to wait anymore and save up. If you want it, you can have it. Just pay with a card and then pay later. But it's that wanting. And younger people, children, older people, they want things. When I was growing up, I remember on occasions wanting to persuade my mum and dad that if only they'd give me this particular thing, a bike or whatever it might be, I would be full of joy and happiness forever. And in their wisdom, they often didn't give it to me. And even then, when I got it, I wasn't happy because it just led to wanting something else. And there's no end, is there, to wanting and seeking things. And that's covetousness. That's a sin we've got to guard against, an immoderate, greedy desire for the things of this world. And it can lead to envy, to dishonesty, and to uncharitableness. Many of the other commandments link with the sin of covetousness. I see what my neighbor's got, I haven't got it, so I steal it. Or whatever it might be. It's a root of many other sins. And we're all liable to it, whether we're rich or whether we're poor. And that's the warning. That's why the warning is so important and so relevant. In fact, there, right at the very beginning of time in the book of Genesis, God had given to Adam and Eve all the trees of the garden. Everything that he had created was theirs for them to enjoy. And then the serpent came along and said, but there's something God is holding back from you, isn't there? There's a tree that you're not to eat of. And he tells Eve, that actually God is not wanting to eat from that tree, because on the day she eats of it, she will be like God, knowing good from evil. So she goes and thinks, what a nice tree to look at. It looks as if it would be nice to eat. and also it will make me wise. She covets. She's not content with what she has. God says later, did I not say that you may eat of all the trees of the garden? Why did you want the one that I told you not to eat of? I held it back from you because I love you and because I wanted to do you good. But they listened to the serpent, and Eve disobeyed, and Adam disobeyed, and the consequences were terrible. And how does covetousness work? How do we get lured into that temptation? There's a very vivid description of it in the book of Joshua, when the Israelites have conquered Jericho. They won a great victory. The walls of Jericho have fallen. And they had been told that they were to take all the things that were there in the city, the silver and the gold and the articles of bronze and iron and all the precious things, and they were to destroy them. And by and large they did. But when they went to fight against the next city, Ai, they were defeated. And Joshua went to God with a complaint, really. And he said, you know, if you're not with us, then dishonor will come upon your name. What then will you do for your own great name if we are being defeated by our enemies? And he's down on his face before God, pleading with him. And God, the Lord says to him, stand up. What are you doing on your face? Israel has sinned. They have violated my covenant, which I commanded them to keep. They have taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen. Because one man had disobeyed God, and it brought judgment upon all the people. And eventually they identify the man, a man called Achan. And he is identified. And Joshua confronts him and says, my son, give glory to the Lord, the God of Israel, and give him the praise. Tell me what you have done. Do not hide it from me. And Achan replies, it is true. I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel. This is what I have done. When I saw in the plunder a beautiful robe from Babylonia, 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and took them. They are hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath. That covetousness, I saw them and I wanted them and I disobeyed the commandment of God. And that act of disobedience led to the loss of Israelite lives in the battle against Ai, and led to the loss of Achan and his family's life. It was a sin against the Lord, but that's the process of covenants. I saw they were so nice, they were so beautiful. And we've been told to destroy them. I said, I'm not going to destroy them, I want them. I've hidden them in the ground, and one day I'll pull them out and keep them. I want them for myself. And that's the temptation. That's why Jesus says, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. In the New Testament, there are warnings against the love of money. Not money itself, but the love of money. Paul says to Timothy, people who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. What he's saying is material things, if money and possessions take a strong hold upon us, it has spiritual consequences. And some have even wandered from the faith. In the letter to the Hebrews chapter 13, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. Because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And so there are these warnings. The effect of things upon our spiritual desires and our spiritual health and well-being. All kinds, Jesus says, of greed, all kinds of covetousness. Now, this man's request was a reasonable request. He had a right, it seems, to his share of the inheritance. But Jesus sees this man going down a slippery slope. And it's possible, isn't it, to multiply possessions and to realize that we have an insatiable appetite for things. modern marketing methods are designed to create a desire in us that we didn't know we had. And perhaps we see on the television or we see in magazines or newspapers things that are absolutely essential. And we think, I must have that. I seem to remember reading a little while ago that people may spend as much as £1,500 a year on gadgets that they think are going to be absolutely vital to their lives. And then they just lie there in the cupboard unused. That's the sort of world we're living in, bombarded by modern marketing methods. And sometimes a lot of effort goes into getting the things we need, whatever the cost. And a great deal of time is consumed in caring for them. The more we possess, the more anxiety we have. The book of Ecclesiastes, which is looking at the meaning of life, says whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? And that's the thing with possessions, isn't it? You buy something, you sit there and you look at it and think, isn't it wonderful? Whatever it might be, and you just enjoy looking at it. Because that's what things do. They get a grip on us. The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much. But the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. So wealthy people live in big houses with walls and gates and security systems and cameras. Because people know they've got a lot of things, and it even puts their life in danger. And very often covetousness, a covetous spirit, makes us selfish rather than generous. It makes us want to accumulate. And it can become a pattern in our lives, getting more things just for their own sake and the satisfaction of possessing them. Because people often estimate us by and value us by the things we've got. You know, a man drives around in a car, and that car is a statement about him. That's who you are. If you've done well in life, your car is a statement of that fact. And our possessions control us. We become dependent on them. And that's the sin of covetousness. And in the New Testament, we're told that covetousness is idolatry. It's worshipping and serving created things rather than the Creator. In Romans 1, Paul talks about exchanging the truth of God for a lie. And worshipping and serving created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Living for things. Having two masters, God and money. Jesus says you can't do that. You'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. That pull on our lives. What are the things that matter most to us? And so there's this great statement, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Many possessions don't guarantee length of life. They don't guarantee happiness. But are a temptation against which we need to be on our guard. Because life is more than things. It's more than stuff. And often having a lot of things puts us in danger. It may make us ill. There are diseases of affluence. People work to death in order to obtain, often not the basics, but the extras. And thinking that that's what life is all about. Working long hours and making plans and schemes and being successful. And so Jesus just highlights the sin of covetousness. And there's this warning against it. But then he goes on to illustrate it with a story. It's always helpful, isn't it, when principles are illustrated. And you say, well, what does that look like in the life of somebody? And he tells this story about a certain rich man, a man who's already rich, and a farmer. And his ground produced a good crop, an abundant crop. That happens sometimes to farmers. It's a particularly good year, and the rain and the sun come at the right time, and everything just grows. And it was one of those years for this man, a super abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. My barns aren't big enough. This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to my soul in the ESV, soul, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. And then God says to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And so here's this man, he's already rich, he has a bumper harvest, and he acts very prudently. Jesus doesn't criticize that. It's not wrong to have a bumper harvest. It's not wrong to build bigger barns. It's not wrong to be a good steward of the things that God commits to us. This man was a fool because he thought that the things that he had guaranteed his security and his future. He'd succeeded. He'd made it. He had everything he could possibly want. And now he could stop working. And he could just spend his time eating and drinking and enjoying himself. And that's the dream that many people have, don't they? They dream that they're going to do well, gather goods and things and build up a big pension and then live in retirement and all the plans they have. And then when they retire, if they reach retirement age, perhaps something happens and they can't do it. And they feel cheated by that because they were looking forward to everything being so good. And this man is a fool because he doesn't recognize his mortality. That things don't guarantee length of life. They don't guarantee happiness. And he's succeeded, but he's going to die. He's never thought about that. Never made any preparation for that. And that's why he's a fool. And a fool is not just somebody who's unwise. A fool is someone who doesn't take God into account. If we don't take God into account in our lives, in terms of what the Bible says, we are fools. The psalmist says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And it's more and more common in our society today for people to make it quite clear, I don't believe in God. And by that they say, so I'm free to do what I like. But we're not free. We will one day have to stand before God. And this man has spent all his time building up his riches, building up his possessions, and never thinking about God. And all he has is his wealth, his crops, his barns. And when he dies, he leaves it all behind. The sin of hoarding. And wealth and pleasure are great enticements to people. And they want to live on and enjoy the fruit of their success. But Jesus says, this very night, your life will be demanded from you. Demanded in the sense that God calls us to account. You know, many people obtain lots of possessions by having credit. And the debts that people owe are sometimes staggering. But sometimes there comes a time when those who have lent us money say it's time to pay it back. It's time to face up to the demand we have upon you. And perhaps a letter comes through, you've got to pay now. And Jesus is speaking about that time when God calls us to account for the way that we have lived. And our life, our soul, is demanded of us. Are we ready for that time? Are we ready to answer to God when we have to stand before him, the one to whom we must give an account? This man's never thought about that. And Jesus goes on and says, then who will all those things you've laid up for yourself, who will have them? You won't have them, you'll lose them all. And death is a demanding by God of our soul. For this man it was sudden and in the night. And he left all his earthly treasure behind because he prepared it for himself. It was for his benefit. And he'd never thought about God. He'd never thought about eternity. He never thought about the day that he would die. When we were in Deeside, a young man from Cardiff came to joined the fellowship. He became an elder. He'd been a minister. And he became an elder. And one night we had an elders meeting in his house. It went on quite late. And then the next morning we heard that he hadn't turned up at the place where he worked. He was managing the Christian bookshop in Wrexham. And I had a key to his house and I went to his house. He was a single man living on his own and found that he had died in the night. He had epilepsy and he had had an epileptic attack and he had died. And Margaret and I were there with the family, and as they came to see him, they lived here. And we were helping to sort out all his affairs. You know, one of the wonderful things about that tragic death of a young man of just 32 years old was that all his affairs were in order. There was nothing, nothing that was wrong. He was ready to die. It's a great challenge to us, isn't it? When our soul is demanded of us, are we ready? And as they went into his house and saw the things there that would have been his, he left them all behind. But I thought, I hope when the Lord calls me home that all my affairs will be in order as his were. Will your affairs be in order? Or are you saying, well, later, I'm busy accumulating at the moment, I'm busy making my way, I'm busy seeking things and not thinking about God, and that night, that day, when your soul will be required of you. And so Jesus illustrates the sin of covetousness. Here's this man. He's made it. He's got it all. But he loses it all. He's a fool. And then there's another great principle that Jesus states. A principle to live by. This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich toward God. And that's a challenge to us all, isn't it? How important is God in our lives? Are we rich towards God? Do we give the best that we can possibly give to him? Is that the great priority for us? Because earthly riches and possessions are optional. But being rich towards God is vitally important and absolutely necessary. And that richness to God begins with putting our relationship with God right. And doing that through Jesus Christ, his Son. Repenting of our sins and putting our trust in Jesus and his death. When he paid the price for those sins. When Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he says, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. How do we become rich towards God? By entering into the blessings which the poverty of Jesus Christ won for us. He left the glory of heaven. He left the splendor of heaven that we cannot begin to comprehend. And he came into this world and he made himself nothing. He took the very nature of a servant. And he was obedient unto death, even death on the cross. Why did he do it? Why did he become poor? In order that by his poverty we might become rich. And that's where being rich towards God begins. It's not by doing the odd thing that is good or right or we think might please God and yet living a life which pleases ourselves. It's putting God first. It's making sure that we're right with God and experiencing his grace and his kindness. And without that relationship, we cannot be rich towards God. And then Christians need to be rich in the way that we live. Whether we're rich or whether we're poor materially, to learn to live in fellowship with God, trusting him for his daily providence alone, learning to ask for our daily bread, not relying on our hoarded possessions, but recognizing, as we saw this morning, that God is a wise God in whom we can trust, who will provide for us. There are people in this world who have next to nothing. And sometimes when I've visited countries where people are poor and sat down for a meal, perhaps a very simple meal with them, a number of things have struck me as I sat there in simple homes eating a simple meal. And one of them is their thankfulness. When they give thanks, they thank God for their daily bread. that there is food on the table. It might be the most simple of tables. And the other thing is their generosity. They share what they have. Remember when I was in Zambia and the visit I mentioned earlier, we went to stay in a place called Kabwe and stayed with a family, and they were providing a lunch for us, and the lunch took a little longer to come than we'd expected. The wife was there in the kitchen cooking, and it was only later we realized why. She'd bought a chicken, quite an expensive purchase for them as a family, because they had guests and they wanted to provide for them. It's embarrassing, really. But as the chicken was cooking, a neighborhood dog had come and grabbed it and run away with it. And so they went and bought another one and cooked it for their guests. And our visit cost them not one chicken, but two chickens. And I was humbled at that point. We didn't need for them to do that. They didn't have much, but they were generous. And often that's the way it is. Those who have little are more generous than those who have much. And they trust in God's providence. Perhaps you've heard sometimes of George Muller in his home sitting down to give thanks before an empty table, confident that God would provide. And that's being rich towards God. It's living in conscious dependence upon Him. What we have, He has given us. What have you that you did not receive? He gave us the health and the strength and the energy and the skills to do what we do. And in the end, it all belongs to Him. And then being rich in Christian graces and love, in faith, in obedience, in humility, in self-denial, in good works, in holy living, in witnessing to the gospel. All those things that are part of what it means to be a Christian. Those things at the heart of living the Christian life. And somehow, with all the things that we have, there's a danger at times that we're not rich towards God in those things. That we don't, in the words of Jesus later in this passage, seek first His kingdom. It isn't the great priority. Why? Well, because other things have come in. And there we hear Jesus warning, watch out, be on your guard. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Be rich towards God. What does that look like? Well, later in the chapter he says in verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Conscious of the needs of those around us. Getting rid of things, not just the things we don't need, we could do that certainly, but things perhaps we would otherwise have had in order that others might benefit from it. And having our focus upon God and upon His kingdom and upon His grace, the life of any congregation would be transformed if we took that principle to heart of being rich towards God. We face peculiar temptations because we live in a wealthy part of the world. It isn't a matter of how much we've got or how little we've got. It's that challenge of storing up things for ourselves but not being rich towards God. Are you rich towards God? Are you guarding against those temptations? Are you guarding your soul? Are you guarding your spiritual life? And does the Lord, all that He is and all that He's done for you, mean more to you than anything? We sang that hymn, I'd rather have Jesus than anything this world affords today. What a challenge that is, isn't it? For us to answer that question and say, is that true of us? Because all our good works, all our being rich towards God is nothing compared to what He did for us in His Son, who became poor, that by His poverty we might be rich, and that we might know a God who is rich in mercy. Amen. Let's sing together now our closing hymn from the supplement, number 23 in the supplement.